you know, having done this before, it's like, that's the fastest, most aggressive timeline ever for a complete redo. So the fact that we missed a button is probably not, we're going to call that a success at the end of the day.
Welcome back to Happy Porch Radio, the podcast for ambitious agency leaders. This season is all about Umbraco, the friendly CMS. Join your host, Barry O'Kane, as he talks to web agency leaders and Umbraco experts about the challenges and opportunities that a specific technology like Umbraco brings to our agencies.
Welcome back to Happy Porch Radio Season 2. In the previous episode, we talked a lot about selling Umbraco from the agency point of view, and in particular Theo's framework. And so in this episode, I'm delighted to be able to share the story of choosing Umbraco from the other side of an agency relationship, that of the client. Jessica Rowe is an experienced director of digital marketing and has twice selected Umbraco for large digital projects. We talk a little bit about her background and the skill set she has built up over the years, and then she shares the story of how and why she selected Umbraco. She candidly talks about how a previous negative agency experience completely changed the way she works and approaches these projects. And then we dig really deep into the exact process she used to identify first Umbraco and then an agency. This was a delightful conversation, and I'm incredibly grateful to Jessica for sharing it with us.
My name is Jessica Rowe, and by title right now, I'm the Director of Digital Marketing for a mortgage company here in the United States called BBMC. And my job there is to run a very high velocity lead generation campaigns to feed a whole multitude, a couple hundred bankers. So we run somewhere between 1,000 and 1,500 leads a day through our system. And my job not only is the lead generation aspect, but it's also enhancements in terms of how that traffic and those leads are generated and how we find efficiencies within the process to create more opportunities from those leads to turn them into customers. There's a lot of parts and pieces involved in that from a traditional digital marketing standpoint, but also from what's evolved into this phrase that's all of a sudden very popular with this marketing technologist kind of a role. My path there is kind of an interesting one. You know, a decade ago or more than that, just over that now, I was, you know, I'm able to write HTML and CSS and was doing basic websites. And then it started kind of there because as aside to, you know, organic search ranking, which was just kind of becoming a thing, and paid search campaigns, which were evolving into a great avenue for traffic, became this need to know how to program and code because it all is so interrelated and interconnected that it's kind of evolved from that kind of small starting point with how do we drive a little bit of traffic into this? How do you go end to end with the systems and the content and the campaigns and the technology to create kind of this holistic strategy around digital acquisition, but customer acquisition really is what it's all about.
And as you say, touching every aspect of the process, projects and lifecycle technology right the way through. So an interesting, challenging position.
It's fun. It's a lot of fun, but it is. There's so much to it. There's so many moving parts and pieces all the time to be aware of and stay on top of, and then finding opportunity within those, you know, within each section or segment of that in order to kind of create this system or these sets of systems that work well for the company is really the most interesting part of what I do.
So just to dig a little bit into how you've ended up with the skill set that you have and the position that you have now. So you said you started off coding sites and so on. Is that, when you say started off, do you mean that's where you started in terms of your web career? Or were there several other parts that came together to make this happen?
It was really the very, very beginning for me in the web career. I mean, of course, I have a marketing degree and integrated marketing in college, right? But that was before the web was certainly as powerful for companies as it is now. But it started out as writing some content for websites. It was really actually my first marketing gig that involved the internet was my role, right? But then it became the logical extension to that is the strategy piece, which how does that mean anything to anyone? And how do you connect the dots? And how do you make that appear if somebody wants to look for that? And then how do you, you know, then it became that kind of creating content that's meaningful to people and will rank in search at the early stages of that to how do you run paid traffic to kind of target those high intent customers in kind of unraveling from these different things, which are now, you know, SEO and paid search, and the need to program kind of arose from that because there's so much involved in what's on the pages or behind the pages in the code set that impacts your ability to be successful in those other avenues that I felt like I needed to know that. And you fast forward now to where we are today, and it's helpful in the sense that I have that understanding and still obviously still write some of that, you know, basic coding, right? Even inside of Umbraco, it comes in handy to be able to look at the source code and understand how to make tweaks or changes, or in some instances and in other places, how to troubleshoot a syntax error that's creating some problems for an integration, right? And I've just continued to use that skill set kind of in that way. The other way it comes in super handy is kind of almost as a liaison, because right now my boss, it's not his job to be particularly tech savvy or understand the how pieces work. He just wants to know that they do work and at a high level. And then it's my job to communicate with, like right now, our Umbraco developer partners, we're working with Scandia to complete some projects, and they did the rollout of the new website and are working on some other things. It's my job to translate, this is what we need from the business standpoint to the code side, and this is the best way, or this is how I think we can go about implementing this and be able to communicate effectively then with both sides of that equation.
And the other thing I think that I saw mentioned was that the current role with the lead generation, I guess, a business, is that something that where all these different things have sort of come together for this, like the, you say, marketing technologist role, or is that something you've done in previous roles as well?
This has come in handy in the last couple of roles for me, right, where it's an evolution into this role where my job every day is to drive the overarching strategy in terms of how do you get the kind of customer that whichever company I'm working for, right? How do you find the customers who are looking for whatever product or service we happen to have to offer? How do we reach those? And then how do we put them into a system or a set of processes that are most likely to help them convert into a customer, right? So it's creating the opportunities for conversation through these digital marketing strategies and then converting them through the systems and processes and efficiencies that you can create there through technology into customers. And so that's something that I've used very well the past several roles I've had.
That helps to set the context and the background. One of the reasons I reached out to you, Jessica, was I saw you're speaking at UFest West. Can you tell me a little bit about how that came about and I guess what you're talking about?
Sure, absolutely. So I'm talking about bridging the gap. So it's how does this technology piece from a business standpoint, how does it fulfill the business objectives from the company side, right? And I think that at this particular conference, I'll call myself an odd duck in the sense that it's a lot of developers, which makes complete sense, but I kind of represent the client side. So how does this implementation and how have I now gone down the path of selecting Umbraco twice to be my CMS to meet the business objectives for the company that I'm working with right now? I get to talk about the client side, the selection process, you know, why it is that Umbraco fulfills that needs, why it is that Scandia has been brought to the table twice to help implement Umbraco, and how it helps take that business problem, whatever it happens to be. For me, the last two times has been the need to generate leads more effectively online and organically and have a web presence that's flexible, scalable, and meets some pretty interesting different requirements for financial services than a lot of other industries experience. And so Umbraco fulfills a pretty unique need for us from a security layer, a flexibility layer. So I get to talk about all of those pieces. And then the implementation side as well. Like, what's that experience like for me in terms of taking what is a very flexible CMS and has the ability to do pretty much anything you want it to do, and implementing it in a way that's very usable from the business side.
Let's dig a little bit into that decision-making process that you're describing, and maybe you could share the story of one or both of those, but like where the, from the very starting point, like the project needs to happen. So what was the journey to get to that point and the selection process? And was it the same for the two different projects that you're talking about?
I came to the second project having already gone through the process with the first. So you kind of come armed with this whole kind of set of knowledge that you didn't have before. So the second time around is much easier. So I'll talk about the first. In the first selection process, we I was at a different financial services institution, so same kind of quirky regulations around what we were doing, but we knew we needed a new website. The website that the bank at the time had was not mobile responsive, had Flash on the homepage, like those for those two reasons alone, right? You should probably go ahead and scrap your website and start over. And the CMS that we were using was outdated and had no flexibility whatsoever. And so we were beholden then to developers to create any new page or content that we needed, which was shocking to me. Like, why do they call it a CMS? That's not helpful. You have to have access to something in order for that to be a useful tool, which ironically was the same problem I ran into with my current position, right? Is there, we're still beholden to a developer who's going to charge a minimum of 2 hours to stand up any page. And they're trying to tell my boss that it takes 3 hours to replicate a page and swap out 5 words. It's like, wait a minute, no, right? Like, these are things we need to have the ability to do for ourselves. And, you know, so then you like, okay, so we need a new CMS. What does that have to be? So from a financial services standpoint, it has to have versioning. It has to have the ability to be very secure, because even without having customer sensitive data necessarily stored inside your CMS database or any of the form data that you collect, there's still a stringent security requirement. It has to have workflows. It has to have, right? And for us, you start making, we literally made a checklist, a weighted checklist, and said it has to do all of these kinds of things. But it also has to give us the opportunity from the strategic side to rank well organically in terms of how the code is structured, how we can put our H1s through H4s in the order that we want to, how we can, you know, structure the pages in such a way and the navigation that we will get that organic traffic if we do our jobs right. And how do we create landing pages that are strong in terms of call to action, so that when we drive more traffic, they're able to find what they want. And then there again, give us the opportunity to have those conversations and transform traffic into customers. And so through all of that selection process, and you start to make your list of contenders from a CMS standpoint, everybody looks at WordPress now. Everybody wanted WordPress. And it's like, no, WordPress, there's so many of those boxes that are problematic for the WordPress website. Security risk being probably the number one red flag that went off for all of us. It's like WordPress is not the option. And so you start to kind of wind down, and some CMSs have exceptionally high price tags. Some of them lack the flexibility. Some of them still require too much development intervention post-launch. And so we arrived at the decision that we wanted to go to work with a firm who specialized in standing up on Braco websites. And so that was kind of the path to how we got there. And then it was selection of an agency, right? So then that's a whole separate selection process. But we went to the Umbraco website and found, you know, certified partners, and then started working on getting proposals and having phone calls and making the determination on which firm we wanted to work with, knowing that the intent was to work with a development partner to build the look, feel of the website and the implementation of Umbraco, and then take over the primary responsibility of the day-to-day management of the site and adding new pages and site sections post-launch of the website. And through all of that, we ended up, like I said, we chose Scandia to be our partner, and worked with Nick and his team to stand up the first new website that I did inside of Umbraco. The other interesting part that I'll talk about is there has to be performance and KPIs, right, that measure what is a successful launch of a new website look like. We're going through and making this investment for this, you know, from, well, Braco itself is cheap, right, but to have a partner, an agency come in and help us do the configuration, and it's time and it's money and it's resources. And so you have to put some KPIs around that. And done right, Umbraco is a fantastic tool. So we knew that after the first implementation, for instance, overall organic site traffic was up almost 23%. The top key conversion pages, right, in terms of open an account or get a mortgage or whatever that bank's key focus areas, were up nearly 400%, 373% for mortgage and 379% for deposit services. Page views were up 211% and visits per page were up 154%, and bounce rate was down 97%, which is amazing, right? When you put forth a mobile experience that people can actually use, people tend to stay on your site a lot more. And so it's really astronomical. They went from closing less than 8 loans per month from the website to now, in this day and age, they're closing nearly 50 in every single month. And you're talking about, it's a 2.5 year time slot and when all of that growth has happened. That's the other interesting part is, okay, how do, if I was agency side, talking to the customers who may or may not be reluctant to make that kind of investment, how do you help them measure that success and gauge, you know, what was a successful launch, or, you know, what are pieces along the way that you can help them benchmark from before to help them tell the story after, so that they can see that this was a successful redesign, you did get it and achieve exactly what you wanted to do. And how do you set them up to be successful in reaching those KPIs from a development standpoint?
So if we start from the early stage process of creating that weighted checklist and so on, what's interesting to me there is that you started, first of all, as the client, you're starting from the agency point of view, as a client, you started with choosing the tooling you were looking for and identifying the solution there, and then the agency, which is, you know, sometimes it happens that way and sometimes it happens the other way around. Was that a conscious decision that you wanted to choose, like, this is the tool I want to use and then we'll find the development partner?
That was a learned behavior. So I've done it the other, I think more typically you'll select the agency and then allow the agency to guide the path, which is certainly fine. But I had been burned by that before, where we selected an agency who then used us as a guinea pig on a new and very expensive CMS. The execution of that launch was, it was just horrific. And so I learned through that process that it doesn't matter, you know, ultimately if the agency is the flashiest or the best or has all kinds of bells and whistles, if they don't truly specialize in the tool that they're trying to implement on your behalf, your launch process and success post-launch will be limited by their inabilities. So in getting to do it all over again, I went, we want to know what the CMS is first, because we, you know, again, it goes back to having the experience and having worked in multiple CMSs and having this baseline understanding and ability to generate a list of things that we were looking for. We knew that if we narrowed the list down to one or two and then found an agency that specialized in the implementation of that and could also do that UX and UI for us, that we would be in a much better position post-launch.
So the specialization was really important. Yeah, that makes sense. And in order to identify a partner based on the specialization, you wanted to start identifying the tool that you wanted to use first.
Yep. It is a different approach, though, no doubt, I think.
But it's interesting because touching on the specialism thing, or as you say, being experts in the tool, in the technology, as part of that specialization of the agency, and talk, you also mentioned UI and UX and the other pieces that are important. But sort of having that specialism you identified as a problem. Now, looking just quickly, looking at the previous story you mentioned where things didn't go well, what do you think was going on there? Was the agency, you know, was there a misalignment in terms of, did they not understand the priorities? Did they overestimate or underestimate, you know, the tool or their ability to use that tool? Or was there, could you pick out one or two things that maybe contributed to that?
They overestimated their abilities in implementing the tool, without a doubt. And because of that, they didn't have enough resources. And so they ended up trying to staff and scale to finish the project, which then created this ad hoc sort of look and feel where a widget created by one developer then we had 8 CSS style sheets on one page and none of them match. And so we're going through and testing, it's like, that's not the right font. That's not the right color. That's not, why is this happening? And then you start digging into their code base and realizing that they've done it fast, they haven't done it right. And at the end of the day, when you're talking about site speed and consistency and continuity from a user experience and what was a very expensive investment where you would expect all of those things to be right, they were not. And it took a very long time and a lot of back and forth to then unravel some of that and get them to do it right, which of course then pushed the timeline. And then they were arguing about cost. Well, the only reason the timeline got pushed isn't necessarily because we creeped on scope, which client side absolutely does happen. I'll admit it, but I'll own it when I'm creeping there. But this was because they didn't do their side right, and it created a lot of rework because things weren't right, and widgets couldn't use them right or uniformly or across different site sections. And so the things that had been promised that are sort of core to what we needed that website to do just didn't work. And it was a very frustrating process.
interesting there that it sounded like you have the skills or the background to sort of help identify part of the problem there. You're able to identify things like, you know, differences and inconsistencies. Well, that might be because there's developers in different CSS, and you sort of can understand a little bit. Whereas another client from the agency point of view might not, they might just be seeing the symptoms and feeling that frustration, but not understanding how and why that's happening.
Yeah, I think that that's definitely, I definitely feel like that's one of my strong suits. And I've been told that, right? One of the things that I bring to the table in these kinds of projects, given my background, is the ability to kind of understand both sides, because I've done agency side work and client side, but I also have that understanding of at least basic coding and can start to look in and dig in a little bit and investigate and ask the right questions and unravel some of those mysteries that tend to happen during any development project. There's always little things that's like, okay, why is it doing that? And, you know, at least I can help facilitate that conversation. And I think that, you know, those sorts of abilities is what have enabled, well, the last two Umbraco website launches to go as smoothly and as successfully as they have.
And yeah, and to look at the responsibility of that agency in these kind of situations to make sure that, especially if things aren't going perfectly, to be able to communicate and explain and not be in the position where the firefighting sort of death march situation that you're talking about. I wanted to go back to the weighted checklist you mentioned, because I think that's really interesting. And from an agency point of view, I think that's something that's very often the agency maybe has to work with the client to extract or understand that information. You know, it sounded like you had a very clear vision. You went through your checklist and you weighted it in terms of business priorities, I assume. So can you just talk a little bit about how you came up with that list? Was it a very straightforward thing? Did you have to involve a lot of stakeholders? You know, what was the process to come up with it?
So in things like that, you obviously need your absolute key stakeholders, but you don't want, when you're talking about your weighted checklist for something, those kinds of selection processes, you don't want the entire universe to have a say. Because that happens when you start to get into content land and site sectioning and prioritization from a navigational standpoint, where you need to have that broader audience involved to make sure that you're not missing things that are really important. But involving too many stakeholders too early in the process, and everybody's, their product or service is always the most important product or service, and it actually becomes a hindrance to trying to get a project off the ground. So instead, we had a very, very small, we had IT security involved with that. We had one of the lead internal developers involved with that, myself, and then my boss, who was the CEO. So we had a very small group to select kind of, here's what we need from a security standpoint. We need to be able to do this from a development standpoint. We didn't self-develop on it, but we could have if we'd wanted to. But he also brought kind of an interesting set of priorities or desires with that he wanted to see in the CMS from a flexibility standpoint primarily. And then you had me representing kind of that, the marketing side and the transactional side of that need. And so we made our list based on those things. So the flexibility, how secure can it be? How can we control the things that we have to in terms of putting up speed bumps when you're leaving the site, or putting up editorial, different kind of roles in there, and versioning and those sorts of things. And then weighted it based on what's a regulatory requirement that we have to have in place versus what's something that we really want to have in place. Cost was another one, right? The expense of the tool from an ongoing basis and from that agency partnership side, right? And how important are all of these things? And really you just rank them in order and then weight them accordingly. And then what's a nice to have versus a have to have.
Okay, so then the actual process, so you have the checklist and you're saying, okay, looking at the tools and other frameworks available, is that something that did you have the sort of understanding of what was available in the for these kinds of tools within the team, or was there research involved? How in-depth and how complicated, I guess, was the process of checking off the tools against the checklist that you had?
We spent about a solid two of us, probably an entire week, looking at different tools, which may or may not sound like a lot. I think from a resource standpoint, when you're talking about a limited number of resources working at an institution or at, you know, on the client side, that's a significant investment in time. But it's doing the demos and playing in sandboxes and doing research and reading ratings and reviews and comparisons. And then the two of us kind of went to our own separate ways to kind of do that research. And then we would then midway through that, we're like, hey, have you checked out? And we each flipped, you know, a couple back and forth to make sure that you know, when we met to get together to make the short list, that we had all, you know, evaluated the things that the other ones found and that he found interesting, or that he had looked at what I found interesting, so that when we then met to rate them or discuss the scorecard, we were at least on a level playing field. But we did invest quite a bit of time in research.
Then specifically with Umbraco, when you're doing that research process, what kind of, when you say, you know, demos and reviews, what kind of information did you find? And did you find that easy to dig out that kind of information? Or did you have to really dig to find it?
So once we found Umbraco, which is not, you know, is not a top of mind CMS yet, and, you know, I believe it's becoming more and more popular, we did find it. And then once you start to dig into kind of the comparisons, and there is a fair amount of literature out there from, you know, for the customer to go out and read in terms of implementation and the, you know, the pros and cons and how does it compare against, we'll use WordPress, for instance. And there's enough literature out there to help in that education process for sure.
And then just stepping through the process, so you've identified Umbraco, you've said this ticks all our boxes. Were there any concerns at that point? Were you thinking, were you 100% convinced about Umbraco, or did you still have questions or concerns or things that you thought maybe weren't sure if this would meet the needs that you had?
Yeah, we still definitely had questions. And so that's when you start to look at, you know, what agencies might be a good fit, who have worked with for us. It's, you know, who is a leading authority in the tool and who's got some financial services background. So we're not doing that whole education process, right, was kind of where we started. And then we started asking questions of the potential agency partners in terms of, hey, how do we overcome? Is this something that's, you know, a good fit within Umbraco and allow them to kind of help us finish that education process through that dialogue, which is where Nick was very helpful. And for us, it was like, hey, this guy wrote the book on Umbraco literally, so he's probably a good guy to talk to. And so we worked through the rest of the concerns then with them and just were reassured that the decision that we were making was a good one.
So that's interesting to me that before, when we were talking about specialism, we were focusing on the tooling and the technology specialism. One of the questions I had was how important was things like understanding the industry and that background, as well as the other parts of the jigsaw that you needed the agency to provide?
It is important, especially, like I said, with as heavily regulated as we are from a usability standpoint, from a design standpoint, from elements that are required and have to be there, like we've said, versioning and editorial control, which, you know, a lot of CMSs have, but kind of putting all of that together, speed bumps. If you leave the site, you have to basically shout to the consumer, hey, you're leaving our website. And, you know, just as some basic elements and things that have to go in the footer and where things have to get displayed or not displayed. And it certainly helps to have for us, it was helpful to have a partner that had worked in that industry before.
We won't touch on the actual delivery of the project, but what I'm interested in next is, so you touched on some amazing stats and sounded like a life-changing sort of experience from the previous site. How much do you think that was based on the fact that you described a site that wasn't responsive and that sounded just old, basically, versus how much was an impact of the process you went through and the fact that you chose Umbraco and worked with a good agency?
I think that the bounce rate is an easy win for just cross-device compatibility, right? To get the mobile site section so that people weren't just abandoning because the page wouldn't load for them. Huge win just by the virtue of a redesign. So that one's easy. The rest of it, when you start talking about the organic search lift, the pull-through and in conversions, that I think is attributable to the agency work on the project and what my team did from a strategic implementation standpoint, where if you take your time and do your research to set up the with your design team, right, the hierarchy from a navigational structure that's optimized and then the content and drill down and customer experience there, where you have the opportunity to rank well because you're being very strategic. And then you also have an experience on that site because of the design elements to convert those, you know, those eyeballs into contacts. And I think the vast majority of the wins in both of the Umbraco implementations that we've seen are more to do with Umbraco and strategic decision-making with agency side and, you know, the internal team, more so than it is just, oh, it's a new website.
Do you have a specific example of where you feel Umbraco, the tool, really complemented the sort of strategic and the, you know, what you as a team was looking to do?
Well, some of it comes through the flexibility of Umbraco, but some of it comes through how it is that you can then take that flexibility and implement it in a way that, like, page structure lays out the way that Google wants it to, that you can add the SEO components to each individual page and have the SEO checker to make sure that you're not missing your 301s, and you have these tools that are kind of baked in and then allow you to then execute that on a big level, right? So again, with the flexibility in the nodes and how you go top down, how you name things, how you can set the page, like the page name structure to align with the SEO objectives, right? I think all of that, when you start adding all of those things together in terms of how you roll out the website and those individual pages all together, like all of that is what contributes to the success and the ability to rank better, to drive those customers inbound, and then again, to convert them. It has everything to do with how you implement Umbraco.
That's exactly the observation I was going to make. What you described there is, because Umbraco is so flexible, there's so many different ways to implement it. But what you described there was a really an implementation that really fitted with what you're trying to do, which I guess comes back to the agency and their expertise.
Right.
How is Umbraco working for you on an ongoing, like on the longer term basis? Do you have an ongoing relationship with the agency? Has everything moved in-house now?
We currently have an ongoing relationship with Scandia. They're still doing, so there's some different things that we've asked for. We then took a product that we had outsourced and purchased from a vendor every single month, and then they built it for us inside of Umbraco. And what that is our ability to ingest all of our leads. So we're calling it the API hub because it's just a bunch of integrations, both from lead partners and our website to third-party data providers who then append those leads and pass it back to us and inside of Umbraco. And then we post it from Umbraco to our lead management system. And while that sounds very complicated and convoluted, I say that because it does demonstrate the flexibility of what Umbraco could do, because it's not none of that is out of the box functionality, but it is manageable. Then I have an interface in there where all of my leads are, I can see them and look at time for each step and failure rate and success rates and manage all of that then in that one interface.
Yeah, that's really interesting too. And as you say, that's integrations rather than you could try and create custom for those tools, but integrating and using the Umbraco back office as a hub for that is really smart, I think.
Yes, I think it's definitely creative use case for that back office. And it's something that we've spent a couple of months to build out, but it's also pretty complicated. But it is nice to then have all of that, one, in-house, and two, inside of one system even.
The flip side of the coin, what were the challenges? What were the difficult parts, or particularly from Umbraco? What were the things that didn't maybe go so well, or where you feel Umbraco didn't quite excel?
The learning curve in Umbraco is certainly different or harder from, I think I'll call it a WordPress culture, right? So in training my teams in how to use the tool and the systems and to lay it out, right, where you add the different page elements and how to format things, I think took a little bit of time. And it went pretty smoothly, other than like in this last implementation, for instance, we missed buttons. So right, this is just a silly thing to miss, but the easy ability to throw a button from formatting inside of a paragraph is something that we missed. And so then you just have to go back and ask, okay, can we get a couple of different colored buttons in there that are easy to insert instead of having to do it as a different page element? Beyond that, like there's those little things that you missed, and then we needed the ability to add tags. Some of them were added in the very beginning, then we needed to add some custom tags to individual pages. And so going back and creating the ability to do that for us to do that on our own, there again, not wanting to go back to them to have to develop it every single time that we have to add one. So those sorts of misses on things that didn't get completely thought through, but you're also talking about this in this last go around. So website we built in like 3.5 months from soup to nuts. We redid the whole thing, which to people like my boss, they're like, oh, well, that's taking forever. And reality from a development standpoint, and having done this before, it's like that's the fastest, most aggressive timeline ever for a complete redo. So the fact that we missed a button is probably not, we're going to call that a success at the end of the day. But I think that, depending, I know every implementation is different, and just making sure you take the time to work with, with your agency or with the development team from client side to understand exactly how to use the different components and widgets and elements, to create the rest of what you need your site to do, I think is the key to long-term success and self-managing a lot of those page elements.
And then, as you say, as well, keep thinking about that, not expecting it to be perfect the first time, but there are, some sort of something that grows and extends and as your needs change and as you realize things.
Yep. And I think so from an agency standpoint, that's something, though, that there should be or could be some interesting checklists of things that you have in the background of things that maybe are easy to overlook, but that we need to think through for those customers, and buttons may or may not make one of those. But some of that will probably depend on how savvy your customer is. I think some of those things, or you could almost put a punch list together to make sure that, hey, we didn't forget any of these items that we know they're eventually going to want, need, or ask for, and make sure those just get included with each build.
That's a personal soapbox of mine. Things like that, and systemizing things so that you're not reinventing the basic stuff, then you can focus on the more high-value things from the agency side.
Absolutely. But all in all, I mean, the rollouts have been remarkably successful.
If people want to find out, reach out to yourself or find out a little bit more about you and the work that you do and the company you work for, are there any links or any places I can point people to?
They can look up Jessica Rowe on LinkedIn. It's probably the easiest way to find me. And I'm happy to answer any questions about, the process that we've gone through, or, my rollouts, or any way I can be of help. That's a great place to find me, for sure.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
You can find the show notes for this episode and all the other episodes on happyporchradio.com. Now, just before we finish, a short announcement. As part of the preparation for this series, we ran a survey titled Umbraco in Business. I'll link to the results of that survey in the show notes, by the way. And in the survey, you told us selling Umbraco was one of the biggest agency challenges, and so we wanted to tackle some of your questions in more detail by giving you an opportunity to get involved directly in the conversation. And so I am hosting our first Happy Porch Hot Seat live virtual meetup on April 26th. Jessica will be joining us on the panel along with some other experts, including Umbraco HQ's Chief Friendmaker and Recovering Agency Sales Director, Anders. And we'll talk all things Umbraco selling. We'll have a short panel discussion and then a live Q&A session where you can get answers to all your burning questions. And to find out more and register, go to happyporchradio.com/hotseat. Thanks for listening.